This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Roughly 6,000 people crammed La Place de la République in downtown Paris on Sunday, chanting and brandishing signs like Basta or Enough and President Not Found in reference to 82-year-old President Abdelaziz Bouteflika.
That's Lisa Bryant reporting on the protests yesterday in France against Algeria's aging president seeking a new term. Details coming up. Also, the deaths of 24 gold miners in Zimbabwe is bringing new attention to the human cost of the industry. And a Nigerian federal judge has ruled that the seizure and deportation of a group of Cameroonian separatists by Nigerian security forces was illegal and unconstitutional. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, protests are continuing in Algeria, opposing another term for ailing leader Abdelaziz Bouteflika, despite reports he's promised not to serve his full time if re-elected in April. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports on demonstrations that mobilized tens of thousands across Algeria, as well as Algeria's diaspora in the former colonial power France.
Roughly 6,000 people crammed La Place de la République in downtown Paris on Sunday, chanting and brandishing signs like Basta or Enough and President Not Found in reference to 82-year-old President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who is confined to a wheelchair and rarely seen in public. Algerian Houda Omarani says Bouteflika has served his time. Five terms is too much. It's time for change. Her friend Yasmine Bouaish says Algerians aren't just protesting another presidential run. The whole power system has to change. But people don't want to return to the bloodshed and violence of 1991. The popular protests in Algeria, some of the biggest in decades, have taken both the government and experts by surprise, and they have been largely peaceful. Nobody wants a repeat of the 1990s civil war that began with the 1991 legislative election in which an Islamist party won. There's another difference today. Like other recent uprisings, this one is largely driven by social media.
All like the calls for the protests were on social media, and also social media played like main role to keep it peaceful, because people are spreading this message and they are like enforcing.
Algerian blogger Kamel Labid traveled from London to join the Paris demonstrations. Like others, he agrees there are few existing alternatives to Algeria's current government. The political opposition is aging and weak.
But in Algeria, it has 40 million people. So we can get younger people who can lead the country.
That may include some among Algeria's sizable diaspora in France, estimated at between 1 and 2 million people. French Algerian Majdid Messaouden is a municipal councillor in the Paris suburb of Saint-Denis.
Et nous, en tant que Franco-Algérien, on a deux pays dont on est fier et on les soutient.
Messaouden says he's proud to be both French and Algerian. It gives him hope to see the massive mobilization in his parents' homeland, with a single objective, he says, to topple the system. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Zimbabwe might have surpassed its 2018 gold production target, but the deaths of 24 gold miners when their mine flooded last month called new attention to the human cost of the industry. Now, questions are also emerging on how much the country is benefiting from its gold, with some saying there is little to show for it as the Zimbabwean economy remains in crisis. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Kudza naizvomuya a small scale gold panner in Bindura, about 100 kilometers north of Harare, waits for his 20 plus kilograms of stones as they are being processed to check how much gold they contain. This 31-year-old man is among many people in this mineral-rich area who have abandoned farming for gold mining. Zomuya says not much has changed for him financially since he gave up farming 6 years ago, but he remains hopeful. Zomuya says that, yes, gold is a good source of income, but some risks are involved. He says you can become trapped underground, but there is nothing anyone can do given the harsh economic environment. But he says others have managed to buy cattle, others built nice houses through gold. So, in his words, I'm hopeful. Later, Zomuya crawls into his dilapidated office made of poles and grass, where a waiting buyer pays him for the gold. Figures are concealed. But he has an appeal to President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government, which resembles that of another small-scale miner, 27-year-old Norman John P. John P. says they should equip us with electric pumps to drain water underground if we are working in or near rivers. Plus, as youths, they should give us our land to mine. Here we are just mining, but we do not own it, he says. Small miners accounted for 50% of Zimbabwe's 2018 gold production of 33 tons. Despite the figures, analysts point to corruption, mismanagement, and a lack of proper policies as the reasons for Zimbabwe's failure to benefit much from the country's wealth mineral. Tinashe Chisaira, a lawyer from People and Earth Solidarity Law Network, comments on that.
I can't really say we are failing to derive value from gold as a nation, because gold is already valuable as a mineral. But what I can say is that the state is failing to support certain institutions that are involved in the gold extraction sector. For instance, the artisanal and small-scale miners.
The Government Minerals Monitoring Agency says the issue of property rights has to be addressed to bring a smile to small-scale miners like Zomuya and John P. who are toiling for Zimbabwe. Mines Minister Winston Chitando says small miners are helping the economy.
We have the Zimbabwe Miners Federation, the entity which government is working with to coordinate the activities of the small-scale mining sector. In terms of the statistics, we did 33 tons of gold, of which over 50% came from the artisanal mining sector. When you also have a lot of artisanal mining in the chrome ore, we estimate that over 50% of the chrome ores come from artisanal miners.
But regardless of that, the small-scale miners and most Zimbabweans still suffer from shortages of basic commodities such as fuel, bread, and foreign currency in a country rich in resources such as lithium, diamonds, and platinum. Zimbabwe is in the midst of its severest economic crisis in a decade. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A parliamentary committee in Zimbabwe is writing a new law for establishing and operating businesses in Zimbabwe. This law will replace the current Companies Act and bring big changes to Zimbabwean business owners and foreign investors in Zimbabwe. Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
Zimbabwe's Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, responsible for justice and legal affairs, is currently engaged in public consultations for a proposed law called the Companies and Other Entities Act. A team of legislators fielded representations from stakeholders in business and the general public recently on different parts of the bill, which has been praised by analysts as a step in the right direction. The bill is in keeping with government's widely spoken mantra of Zimbabwe being open for business. The new law, supporters say, addresses the need to make doing business easier. Job Sikala, an MDC legislator, speaks on some of the bill's major provisions.
No, the major gains that are going to be obtained through this bill is that, one, all applications for company registration is going to be done electronically. So it becomes more conducive and easier for business persons to be able to register their business entities. Secondly, it is also the formalization of the registration of other business entities that were not governed by any law but by common law, such as partnerships and private business corporations. They are now going to be registered through the new companies and other business entities bill. And also the other issue is that it is revised on people who should qualify to become directors of companies, that they should have certain expertise for them to be appointed directors, whether it is a private entity, a business entity, or a public business entity. So specifically, there are quite a number of gains.
The existing law was enacted in 1951 and is considered outdated. The new bill has been largely welcomed, but observers point out a potential inconvenience for existing business. The bill requires that all existing companies would have to re-register with the government within 12 months of the bill's signing, a point which is yet to be clarified. Reservations were also expressed by some members of the Affirmative Action Group and others, including business analyst Reginald Shoko.
What then happens is that in as much as we want to think globally, we must act locally. This bill, to some extent, sends indigenization to the dustbin. But we're saying, let's think about the idea of reversing certain sectors for the indigenous people, because these are the people that have been with Zimbabwe when it turns cold, when everyone runs away, they have been with us. So we need to protect certain sectors and reinvent them for the Zimbabweans. That's the biggest challenge we have with this bill.
In the past, another law, the Indigenization Act, required foreign companies to have local partners with a 51-49% shareholding structure in all sectors for foreigners. That law was amended last year to confine the requirement to the extractive sectors of mining, especially platinum and gold. The new Companies Act does not mention indigenization and opens the doors for foreigners without restrictions, a point which legislator Sikala feels strongly about.
In business, we don't want people to seek protection whilst they are doing nothing. Business must protect itself.
Ordinary Zimbabweans who attended the hearing, such as Mtulisi Nkuni, see an improvement in the bill, especially with electronic registrations.
Especially on the issues of around name searches, where you submit 5 names, we are told that all of them have been taken. It will take you more than 3 times, which will translate to more than maybe 3 months when we are still trying to even secure just a name.
The bill is now going through its second reading. The final stop for the parliamentary committee is in the capital, Harare. Feedback from the countrywide hearings will be considered before the bill is presented to the full parliament for final approval. It will then need to be signed by the president. The law is expected to pass in the coming weeks. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here is a recap of our top stories. Protests are continuing in Algeria, opposing another term for longtime ailing leader Abdelaziz Bouteflika. And the deaths of 24 gold miners in Zimbabwe is bringing new attention to the human cost of the industry. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A Nigerian federal judge has ruled that the seizure and deportation of a group of Cameroonian separatists by Nigerian security forces was illegal and unconstitutional. Nigeria's Attorney General says the government is waiting for an official copy of the judgment before it decides what to do next. The Cameroonians include Julius Sisiku Aikutabi, the self-declared president of the separatist area in Cameroon known as the Republic of Ambazonia. The area is recognized internationally as part of Cameroon. The English-speaking area of French-speaking Cameroon has sought independence for many years. Aikutabi and others are now on trial in Cameroon before a military tribunal. The Nigerian judge who issued the ruling has ordered the government to bring the Cameroonian separatists back to Nigeria and also to pay them compensation. VOH's James Butty spoke to Nigeria's Attorney General Abubakar Malami about the case in the Nigerian courts.
Fundamentally, you know, as you rightly know, they were seeking for an order directing that deportation was null and void and they should be brought back to Nigeria. That was the gist, inclusive of some damages arising from the action of the Nigerian government. And incidentally, by the judgment of the Federal High Court, all the relief sought by them were granted. But then we are yet to receive a formal copy of the judgment for us to study the same and take a decision as to what to do next. So the position of things that there exists indeed a judgment that has been delivered by a court, and then we need to study the same against the background of the antecedents of what happened for the purpose of taking a decision. We are yet to decide on a formal position to take other than from the judgment anyway.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communications for the Ambazonian Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He spoke with James Patti about what the Ambazonian leaders are seeking and the charges they face in Cameroon.
At the time of their deportation, the United Nations High Commission for Refugees criticized that. What is it now that you want? The return of your leaders to Nigeria or compensation? Which one comes first?
I think both are very critical because they have suffered unmerited imprisonment for a year in Comunicado. I think anyone who thinks that that compensation is not important doesn't know what he or she is thinking. Both are very important. They need to regain their freedom. Of course, you cannot give them money in prison while they are in jail. They have first to regain their freedom and then receive that compensation. And we are hoping that the Cameroon government, with the ruling in Nigeria, will immediately and unconditionally release them so they can then go after what the court in Nigeria has given them as compensation.
The Nigerian court ruling comes at a very crucial time now because I think the next hearing of your leaders before the military tribunal is this Thursday, March 7th. What would you like to see happen?
We have said again and again and adding to the ruling in Nigeria that French Cameroon has no jurisdiction at all to try them even for a second in any court in French Cameroon. We want their unconditional release. They are patriots, they are nationalists. They should be released unconditionally to the people of the Southern Cameroon.
And that was VOA's James Barty speaking with Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian Separatist Movement. And in news from the sports world, Kamaru Osman has become the first African-born champion in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, or UFC, taking the welterweight crown Saturday night by overwhelming three-time title holder Tyron Woodley. Osman, who was born in Nigeria, improved his mixed martial arts record to 15-1, including 10-0 in the UFC. He next faces Colby Covington. No date has been set. Stay tuned after the show for more details on the sunny side of sports. Yet Nabarsh Nguse lost her sight at the age of 5, but she has not let her disability slow her down. A tireless advocate for people with disabilities in Africa, she has received prestigious prizes, including the Spirit of Helen Keller Award and the Alternative Nobel Prize. Yet Nabarsh Nguse recently spoke to VOA Salem Salomon from our studios in New York, and here is her story.
Growing up in the rural province of Wollo, Ethiopia, Yetna Nabarsh Nguse was thought to have little prospects for success in life after she became blind as a result of meningitis.
Becoming blind was, like quite so many people, meant for my mom that, oh my gosh, it's going to be end of her life. She can only live until you're alive.
But where others saw obstacles, she saw opportunity.
Had I not been blind, I would have been early married, like at the age of 10 or 12. So I always called that being blind was my emancipator. That way it gave me the path to education and brought me to where I am today.
While other young girls were married off as child brides or forced to work at home, she was allowed to devote herself to learning. She moved to the capital, Addis Ababa, and pursued education, eventually earning a law degree. She went on to form a group, the Ethiopian Center for Disability and Development, that advocates for the rights of the disabled in her home country. Yet Nabarsh isn't alone in the struggle for access. An estimated 15 million people in Ethiopia live with disabilities, and they are often stigmatized by society and have heightened risk of poverty. She says society assumes people with disabilities are unable to perform even the most basic tasks.
They really get amazed when you do something because the initial thinking that they have is because if you have a disability, they think that you're full of disabilities.
Yet Nabarsh's organization, the Ethiopian Center, has sought to address these barriers through job training and publications. She also advocates for legal changes, including overturning a restriction that makes it illegal for deaf people in Ethiopia to drive.
It depends on how you view the person. Like, for example, if you see a person using a wheelchair, then if you say, because he's using a wheelchair, he cannot be a doctor, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't have any relationships.
She also has a message for allies who want to help disabled people.
So that way people can help us to unlock our potentials, to become who we can be.
Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Lenor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Tuesday on Health Chat, we will discuss rare diseases, a group of disorders that affect about 350 million people around the world and are difficult to diagnose. Our guest is Chika Dunyo, Director of Education Programs with the U.S. National Organization for Rare Disorders. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we are celebrating the accomplishments of women on the continent. This year's United Nations theme is Think Equal, Build Smart, Innovate for Change. an in-depth discussion on the path to gender equality on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news. Stand up!